it is. This is Broken Spake Podcast. Who cares about our social media? We never check it. Maybe you check the email. Whatever.
Check the email.
Who cares? He checks the email. We're going to be doing a topic. This was Noah's idea. This idea is near to his heart because it happened to him at the church. He is at now. No, I'm just kidding. Well, maybe not. I don't know. We'll find out what he has to say. But we're going to be talking about church trauma.
Mm.
And the more times I thought about that word and I was saying it, the more it started to sound weird. And then I thought, am I saying it right?
Church trauma.
So I wanted
to... It doesn't really roll off the tongue that well.
No.
But it fits.
I also, when I thought of drama, and we'll get into it at some point, I thought of scandals. Like church scandals, because church scandals usually meant there was a victim involved, and that victim then would proceed to have church trauma.
Right.
I just want to share something I found, and then I'll take it right to you.
Ooh.
RTS. Please tell me you don't have that.
RTS. I don't think so.
Religious trauma syndrome.
Okay. I heard another term, post-traumatic church syndrome.
Yeah, it probably... Yeah. Okay,
PTSD, but...
CPTSD.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right, well, here we go.
But I don't have any notes on it, so go ahead.
Yes. Now, first off, what I'm about to say isn't a technical definition in the newest diagnostic book of...
Medical, whatever.
Yeah, I always want to remember that.
DSM-5, whatever
it's called. Yeah, there you go. But it's RTS, Religious Trauma Syndrome, say that 5 times fast... occurs when an individual struggles with leaving a religion or a set of beliefs that has led to their indoctrination.
Mm.
It often involves the trauma of breaking away from a controlling environment, lifestyle, or religious figure. In some settings, the symptoms of religious trauma can be similar to that of complex post-traumatic stress disorder, CPTSD.
Mm. Yeah, and that's kind of what we're looking at today. And the reason I thought I wanted to talk about this was... I mean, this has always been an issue.
At our church especially.
Right. But I was recently talking to somebody this week, and the topic of religion came up, and we were talking about church, and they said they don't go to church anymore because a while back they had some really bad experiences. And they said, you know, they're still Christian, they still believe the gospel, all that, but they said they can't go to church anymore because of this bad experience. And that's what got me thinking about this is more and more I feel like I see people in our age range, like 18 to 30s and older, but specifically younger people as well, who have these really negative experiences in church. And it sours their experience, it sours their beliefs, and it creates this trauma in a sense, right? This deep wound that stays with them. And I was looking at some statistics. I don't have the numbers, but... just as I was looking around, the amount of people in a recent poll who describe themselves as non-religious is one of the highest it's been in, I think, ever in America. And a lot of people are experiencing these problems. And it's not necessarily anything new, because I remember my parents telling stories about when they were still Catholic, you know, and they would talk about in school, like the nuns would smack their knuckles with a ruler for like misbehaving and stuff. And you know, my dad once had his desk thrown out the classroom for misbehaving by a nun.
Your dad was a wild man.
Yeah. And, but like, you know, I feel like our parents, right, the older generation, you see a lot of them left Catholicism to become Protestant because of similar issues. But now people are just leaving the church entirely because of these issues. Now, it can be bad teaching, it could be things like that, but I think there's a lot of judgment, there's a lot of harsh sentiments amongst Christians today, there's a lot of people are in the church and they don't feel as welcomed as they should be, and that's causing them to walk away. It's mm-hmm. causing them to leave because they... You know, because everybody's going to face times of doubt and questioning, especially as people are in their 20s and 30s. They're going to have questions, they're going to have doubts, they're going to have moments of hesitation. And it's only made worse if you already don't feel that accepted or already feeling on the outskirts of your church, right? It's going to make it easier for you to get pushed away. And this is a big issue. And for somebody who is solid in their faith, they might not realize this or see this happening, but it is happening all over the country. Even here in the Valley, you know, there are people who are being hurt by the church and by Christians. And I guess what I want to talk about today is not just why this is happening, but how do we prevent it? How do we help those people who are in those situations? Because if we're ignorant to this problem, it's going to continue to happen. And we're going to see a greater trend of non-believers growing in this country, because if church is synonymous with a place of trauma and hurt and pain, of course nobody's going to want to come, right? Nobody's going to want to go to church if all they think of is judgment and pain and, you know, not feeling welcome. That's not a place people are going to come to. And so this is something that I think needs to be addressed, not that we have a problem at VCA, but every church needs to be aware of these issues and be self-examining themselves to understand, okay, what can we do better? How can we be more welcoming space so that different groups of people aren't hesitant to come because of, you know, what they fear is going to happen. I want to real quick start with a very well-known example of church trauma, which is Westboro Baptist Church. Mm-hmm. I had to bring them up and talking about
this. I'm glad I didn't put them in my notes.
I had to bring it up because when we're talking about people being hurt by the church, they're a perfect example. Even people who don't... I don't even know where Westboro is. Is it Virginia? Do you know where it is? I have no idea.
Let me find out.
But even people who aren't in that area who hear of Westboro Baptist Church and see what they do are hurt by it, you know? All the way here in California, somebody might not want to come to Valley Christian Assembly because...
Kansas.
They're not going to want to come to a church here in California because of what a church in Kansas is saying or doing. Now, obviously, we can't control that, but it goes to show my point. Real quick, just to emphasize the point, I went to their website just to kind of get some info. Do you know what their URL is, Westboro Baptist Church? I haven't pulled up, but I was just curious if you happen to know off the top of your head.
Is it God Hates Fags?
Yeah, that's the name that's the name of their website.
Can't even leave a review on Google. Like, it's there, but it...
And apologize for anybody who might be offended by that word, but the literal website is called God Hates Fags. I mean, imagine if you're a person who's like, oh, I'm new to Kansas, I want to get back into church, you've never heard of this church before, and you're looking at their website and that's what it is. Like, that's an insane thing. And so I was going through their website, and in their about sections, they have talking about how they do demonstrations, and they say, we display large, colorful signs containing Bible words and sentiments. We play and sing songs that have appropriate Bible sentiments, vocally preach, and out of obedience to God, we are nonviolent. So I went to look at some of I went to look at some of their signs, right? So here's one, God gives the obedient peace. Okay, fair enough. There was another one, God forgives a brokenhearted sinner. Okay, that's not a bad sign. God hates atheists. God hates fag marriage. God hates
going somewhere.
God hates fagnostics. God hates
fag. What the heck is a fag? Not so you're gay and you're
agnostic. I don't know. Okay. God hates false prophets. God hates gaytheists. That's a new one. God hates lukewarm Christians, etc., etc. God hates blank. God hates blank. All these signs just in a row. That's, you know, like, how many people can you list that God hates? And it's like, I saw some other signs before that were like, God hates soldiers, God hates America, all these things. I'm like, how do you expect anybody to feel welcomed if your primary message is you're hated by God? And they try to explain that, well, it's, you know, as a sinner, that's just the natural standpoint, you're going to be hated by God. And yada. But it's like, even if that's true, that's just not the primary point of the message. And I bring this up to share that this is, again, a real problem that we're facing in America, where somebody who's never even been to church their entire life sees this, and now we, all the way in California, are responsible for overcoming those problems that they have. You know, our church might not have caused the trauma that somebody feels, but we still have a responsibility to try to overcome that.
Yeah.
And I have more to say, but that's why I wanted to lay the groundwork of this issue, that this is a real problem that people are facing. I mean, we don't feel too bad about it when we see them. We say, oh, they're just kind of crazy Christians. But for somebody else, that's a really, really big deal that's going to really cause problems for somebody who isn't a Christian. Yeah. You know?
So I was trying to look for something, but on my notes, one thing I had here, because it's not just Westboro. People say, well, it's just, like you said, just one church.
They're the best example, but it's not just that.
But yeah. There's enough out there to where we can't keep covering it up.
Yeah.
Based on past studies of those who avoid Christian churches, one of the driving forces behind such behavior is the painful experiences endured within the local church context. In fact, one Barna study among unchurched adults showed that nearly 4 out of every 10 non-church-going Americans, 37%, said they avoid churches because of negative past experiences in churches or with church people.
Right.
You know, and then you get this thing. The thing I was looking for, and I don't want to botch it, but I guess I just take the chance and botch it because I couldn't find it, was, you know, there's this, it's a meme, I'll be honest, it's a meme, but it's SpongeBob, everyone's lovable SpongeBob. All the middle-aged women are like, oh, don't talk about him, that's of Satan, whatever. him and Pokemon Pocket Demons, you know?
That's like, right.
So,
same boat.
Yep, I love it. And he's cross-eyed reading this book. And, you know, the meme is one side says the church didn't hurt you. It's just a building.
Right.
And then the other side says, but we are the church.
But we are, yeah.
Yeah. So it's like the church is... So when it says, like, at the top, it's like, oh...
People hurt you, yeah.
I've been hurt by the church. And, like, but the church is just a building. And then the other side says, but we are the church. So, which is it? You know what I mean? Because it's like... Church isn't church is people. It's not the building. So then, when they say I've been hurt by the church, what they're saying is they've been hurt by you.
Yeah.
So how are you going to make that right? And we can say, well, look, Westboro Baptist, they've been all over the news in the years past. They're the prime example. Well, that's just one church in America. Well, look at this—a pretty big church. Not just because the Westboro Baptist Church isn't a big church; they're just widely known.
It's just very loud.
Yeah, like me. But in 2020 and 2021, during COVID-19 global crisis, I copy and paste. So call it what you want. Okay, I had it once and I defeated it. People, it was great. Oh, took me going to Europe to meet my girlfriend to get it. So, was it worth it? Kelowna, I'm not sure. Sorry. Wow. Just kidding. We're engaged now. I need to do better, right? No more jokes.
No more jokes.
Yeah, right. John MacArthur.
Okay.
Big time pastor not LA, but somewhere over there. Very big. Yeah. Contravened. Contravened. I couldn't say that word earlier. Doesn't matter. Contravened orders from Los Angeles County public health officials regarding services at Grace Community Church and insisted that no one from the church had become seriously ill despite reports to the contrary. His major contention was that there was no justification for closing down churches over disease with a 94% survival rate, according to misinterpreted data from the United States Center for Disease Control Prevention. He was misquoting so many different places. He stated that there was a deadlier virus killing people, the virus of sin, leading many to eternal death in contrast to physical death. So, before I go on, is he right? You die on this earth of some sickness, that's terrible. Yes, but going to hell is much worse. Sure. Right. But how he's going about it, staying open, doing all these things, you're not leading people to Christ that way. It's like you're defending your country club instead of breaking down the walls and reaching the people on the streets. Then it said, Los Angeles County sued the church over its refusal to close down, and the church countersued. Dang, this is really becoming a godly situation. Claiming that the county was violating rights to freedom of religion. Okay, some people might agree with that. Whatever. In August 2021, you know, towards the end of this whole debacle,
right,
MacArthur told congregants that, in quotes, many people had contracted COVID-19 while it went through the church in December 2020 and January 2021, including both him and his wife. So, right off the bat, the dude, big church, He's claiming all these nonsensical numbers. I only read a few of them. Church needs to remain open. And if you guys think that the church needed to remained open, like actually inside the building, then you're wacky. And yes, I'm saying this as a conservative-leaning, unvaxxed person. But you're not reaching people
right
that way. And then he comes out and eventually it's all a lie, because then he confesses that, you know, it did go through the church between December and January for these 2 months, and both me and my wife had it.
Right.
Like, so what happened during those months? Was he lying about why he wasn't there?
Right.
Was he up on stage with it? Was his wife there? You know what I mean? It was just utterly ridiculous. And you know how much people probably during COVID-19 left the church because of how the church handled things?
Yeah.
We had people probably leave our church for how we wanted to be closed for a bit. And we had people come to our church because we were meeting outside instead of inside. And there are people who went to see things like this. And it might be unfair because they probably don't even go to his church. But they see things like this. And then it just gives them, like, I'm not going back to that. They've experienced these things. Or they were in that church and they experienced those things. And to hear him say, just this little article, but to hear him probably talk in his church how we're going to remain open. And what, to me, I might not be traumatized. I might just leave, be like, you're an idiot. I don't care about your Bible degrees. You're just an idiot. But other people might be traumatized by what they went through being in a church that didn't care about public safety that much. And again, this is coming from a conservative-leaning, non-vax person, but I just keep it real. I like to offend both sides of the aisle because that's just what it is. I also got one more. Speaking of John MacArthur, I have it here on my phone.
I hope he never listens to this.
Yeah. He's, you know, when I looked him up, 83 years old.
Wow.
So does he know what a podcast is?
Probably not.
There you go. Okay. Right here. I'll try to make this quick. A former member of John MacArthur's megachurch says she was publicly shamed by the pastor in 2002 for her decision to leave her abusive husband and defy church council. MacArthur, who leads Grace Community Church in Sun Valley, California, there you go, I still don't know where that is, whatever, told his congregation, so meaning he's probably on the pulpit, it was necessary for him to call out Eileen Gray, who had rejected church elders' direction to reconcile with her husband, a former children's music and Bible teacher at the church, because the church bears responsibility for God to be the instrument of discipline. In 2005, David Gray, her husband, former husband, was convicted of aggravated child molestation, corporal injury to a child, and child abuse, and is currently serving 21 years to life in a California prison. He had been removed from his position at the church in 2001 and went on to teach music to elementary school-aged children in the Los Angeles School District, a position he got at the recommendation of the church pastors. And this was before he was arrested. Eileen Gray said MacArthur publicly shamed her twice in May and August 2002 in connection with their decision to leave her husband. She said she did not speak out before because she feared repercussions against her children, who are now adults. According to documents and videos obtained by Royce, MacArthur said Eileen was a sinner because she decided to leave her husband to grant no grace at all, to take the children to go away to forsake him, and needed to repent. He said the shaming, although sad, was necessary to maintain fidelity to God and his word. So we are going to shame people so they keep God's word.
Right.
MacArthur asked the church, let's continue to pray for Eileen, but to treat her as an unbeliever for all we know she may be, while also encouraging David, the pedophile, the guy who's in jail, for sympathy and compassion and the loving kindness of God to be his portion. Does God forgive this husband? Yes, he does.
Sure, yeah.
Does she have to stay with him for what he did? No. Should she be shamed by the church for leaving him for what he did? No. You think her kids are going to have trauma growing up in their teens and in their 20s with their dad in jail for things he did to other children? They're going to have trauma looking at the church in general. Because when you have a major church and they're hiding things from people and they're denying this lady and her and what she went through. And you can say, well, Me Too movement crap, she just made it up. The guy went to jail.
Yeah, that's hard to fake.
It's hard to fake that. And yeah, there have been people who have been wrongly jailed. I'm not for the Me Too movement because people can just make up anything. But there's a lot of evidence I didn't get into for time's sake that proves this.
Yeah.
And it's bothersome to me that we say, oh, it's just Westboro about, or just a church here and there. When you have major public figures like John MacArthur, whose books are read by thousands, maybe even millions, whose sermons are heard worldwide, not just in his church, who's a beloved preacher of and pastor of the word, yet he covers up things like this and brushes it aside. And I'm going to be honest, I didn't look super hard, but nowhere did I see a full-on sincere apology or I was wrong.
Right.
Nothing, not a zip. And you know where he's still at? That effing church. Doing his thing. And you wonder why people have church trauma? Because there are pastors all over the place that do that freaking crap and abuse their authority. And the elders are on board with them. And they shove these things aside because they love his Bible teaching and they don't want the church to be split over these things. And they turn that person and they turn them and they kick them out of the church. And the pastor and the elders get the congregation to shame that person in fear of losing their pastor if they don't, who they love as this great, amazing Bible teacher. I don't give enough how great of a Bible teacher you freaking are when you shame people into doing that, into getting her to love her husband. Should she pray that her husband gets saved, changed, rearranged? Yes. But does she have to be with him? No. Does she have a right to be angry? Yes. Should she be shamed in the church? No.
Yeah.
I have more, but I'll let you speak because I have another one. But it's even bigger than that. But I'll leave what's next up to you.
Yeah, I'll just share a little bit more because I do want to at some point talk about what we are to do. But I want to say that towards the end.
Okay.
So I will say one other thing, though, just as I was looking more into it. Because you're saying, you know, obviously we're referencing fairly large churches, but it can happen in small churches, in small settings. You know, I mean, I know people who have gone to small churches, you know, similar size, 100, 200, 300 people, who have experienced some form of trauma.
The only difference is they call the small ones a cult. And exactly. No one's willing to call the big ones a cult.
We're about 50 members too large to be a cult.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. And, you know, one of the statistics I was reading was, or like the whole site dedicated to specifically sexual abuse in churches and misconduct. But they were throwing out some numbers and they said if the average congregation is 400 people in America, and of that average 400, typically 60% of the church is women, they said given those averages, in any given congregation, there's going to be about 7 women who experience some form of sexual misconduct based off all their statistics and whatnot. Mm-hmm. You know, so even small churches can experience problems. And they went on to say, just as a side note, that given the statistics for sexual abuse and church shootings, you're like, I think it was 15 or 20 times more likely to be a victim of sexual misconduct than you are to be shot in a church. Because of how
that's wild.
Rampant it is, yeah. And it just goes to speak to the point that, you know, it's easy to look at these big churches because there's a lot of news, there's a lot of noise, they're all over the place, right? But this is happening all over America. It's happening here in the Coachella Valley. It's happening in the little towns in the middle of nowhere, right? Anywhere there is a church, there are going to be bad members of that church, I guess is the point. Because like you said, we are the church. Mm-hmm. We, the people, make it up. It's not the building that hurts people. It's not the idea that hurts people. It's the members of that church. So anywhere you have a church, there's going to be Christians. And if there's Christians, there's going to be bad ones.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where these problems stem from. And I guess I just kind of wanted to add that on to what you're saying, because we don't want to just focus on the big churches and say, oh, that's just a them problem. You know. And the other thing, too, is that the trauma can affect more than just the victim, you know, because in the situation you just shared, you have the wife, obviously the victim, but there was probably people in that church who were close to her who agreed with her and felt
the kids.
Right. The kids. Right. There's probably a group of people just within that church who were on her side, who ended up leaving and were hurt by that and changed by it. Some who probably never even went back to church. You know, people are going to hear that on the news about that situation and they're going to have their opinions, you know, changed and mixed, you know. I mean, this stuff spreads from one person to the other. Just like somebody whose life is radically changed because of God can affect a whole family or a whole group of people.
Yeah.
Trauma can do the exact same thing.
Yeah.
And we need to remember that it's not just, oh, well, that's the one lady was hurt and that's it. No, there's whole groups of people that can be affected by these issues, which is why it's all the more important that we deal with it properly, because if we just allow it to happen because, well, one person gets hurt here, one person gets hurt there, no, there's whole waves of influence that can come out of that, you know?
Yeah, well, look at, even in our Coachella Valley, 10, no, not 10, like 20, maybe 15, 20 years ago, one of the original pastors, and what I'm about to say is public knowledge all over the news, people know it, Southwest Church, one of the original pastors, I don't know if it was the original pastor, he was found in a jacuzzi with his wife. Okay, what's wrong with that? No big deal. Naked, or if it's with his wife, whatever.
Sure.
But there's pictures, and it's like, so who took the pictures? And then you come to find out, and this was probably around the time before you could just have phones or like...
It's things. Probably an actual digital camera.
Well, I mean, I don't know. But then, they come to find out there's another lady.
Right.
Maybe it was a couple, but I could have swore it was another lady naked with them in the jacuzzi. And eventually he got fired or resigned or something.
Right.
You know, and how many people went to this, when it was called Southwest Community Church, how many people were part of this community, heard him speak, heard those things on the news, saw these things come out, and then saw him walk away? How much trauma do you think, you know, some of those people went through hearing that? Right. Or their kids? And this is just the church that was in Indian Wells. Years later, again, public knowledge. If you say I'm pissing on churches, it is what it is. I call them out for what
this whole episode is going to be about churches. So,
So I have friends who are pastors at a church in the area, and like when I say friends, like legitimate friends. Now I don't agree with their theology affirming and non-affirming.
Okay.
But so one of the pastors, his son, was a husband, wife, and they both had their marriages, their husband and their wife died. And years later, they met each other, something like that. They got married.
Sure.
So I don't think they had kids together, but one of their kids, the son, came out as gay. So I'm not saying I'm for women marriage or man marriage. But then the church, the elders found out, and eventually they told him, you need to either disown your son so you can keep your job, or if you don't, then that means you're approving of your son's lifestyle. Now, you know, if I'm in that position, you know, for me personally, I can't speak for them, I don't approve of that lifestyle, but I'm not going to disown my son, so I would leave the church 10 out of 10 times.
Yeah.
I would leave that position 10 out of 10 times. Because my ministry, first and foremost, is my family, not the church.
Right.
You know, if I'm in that position. Eventually, they gave him some scenario, like, to leave or, you know, all this stuff. And then it was on the news, and they had people with picket signs. And then it became, you know, all, like, opposite side drama on both, because then now you got people saying, this church hates, you know, this church hates gays and blah, 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 and now it's just all over, widespread. And I've talked to them. I see them, you know, I see the wife every couple of weeks at my recovery meeting. And it really hurt them.
Yeah.
And I've talked to people who used to go to that church. And he was the first, like, pastor they've met at a bigger church that once he was done preaching, Sergio, he would walk right off the stage and just stand there and people could come talk to him. You know, like a likable guy. Now, I don't agree with them being necessarily okay with same-sex marriage, and they know that. We've talked about that. But think about how much trauma that family went through, and now they got offered to pastor another church, like months later, after it kind of died down, they got offered to pastor at another church, be one of the associate pastors or whatever, but they still have to drive by that church every so often. And that church told them they can no longer be on the property.
Right.
From their mouth. Not just, you know, telephone where it's from someone's ear to someone's ear to someone's ear and now it's all twisted. She's told me that. And to me, I've even built resentment, and I know people go to Silas who are good people. They had nothing to do with that, and years later, they started going to that church, and great, there are great people that go there. And the new pastor has nothing to do with that, you know? I don't know much about him, but from what I see, from the few clips I've seen, seems like a good guy. But that same elder board, a lot of them are still there. Right. And they're the ones who did this and caused this trauma. I'm not saying go leave Southwest if you go there. I highly doubt people are listening to this from, you know, they go to Southwest. But pray on such things.
Yeah.
You know, but there's trauma everywhere. The new church they started helping pastor at, and they started doing the contemporary service, mostly older people. One of my good friends, he was going there working at the church, and I know none of them are listening to this, but he eventually left his wife for another lady who worked there, and she left her husband. You know, you can tell me I'm pissing on churches. I'm just keeping it real. And I saw firsthand a lot of those families that were in our recovery group, you know, some of them who dealt with alcohol or different things, were tempted to go back because of their best friend, because of their whatever relation he was, or their coworker did that. Their two coworkers did that, and they peaced out, you know?
Yeah.
Now, thank God the church was super, like, they told the congregation, they gave them a chance to change, they didn't, and they told the congregation straight up, you know, and that's the way it should be, you know? And that, there's church hurt. So it's not just Westboro, the most famous. It's not just these big churches like Grace Community Church.
Right.
It's not just the most famous or the biggest. It's in your valley.
Yeah.
I got one more. SBC. You know what SBC is?
BC?
SBC.
No.
Southern Baptist Churches.
Okay.
Southern Baptist Church, the SBC, the Southern Baptist Church.
Sure.
A widespread sexual abuse scandal and cases finally came to light on February 10, 2019. Mm-hmm. And then it came to light again with more stuff coming out. But the initial report found roughly 380 clergy, lay leaders, and volunteers had faced allegations of sexual misconduct, leaving behind over 700 freaking victims.
Wow.
Since 1998. And that's just what they've recorded and reported. The extent of misconduct is further complicated by work within the Southern Baptist Convention to move sex offenders to other communities and resist attempts to address the culture of abuse. So they would move these guys around. Yeah. Instead of,
And that's kind of what the Catholic Church does, too. They kind of just move their priest mm-hmm. around when something happens.
J.D. Greer, then president of the convention, described the abuse as pure evil and called for persuasive change within the denomination, including cooperation with local authorities on investigations and support for survivors. Greer also admitted the denomination's failure in listening to victims and addressing their concerns. This is just... nuts, and eventually they did not want to go through with it. They did not want to do that. Sexual abuse survivors and advocates quickly responded to this report. And the worst part is that we have known for years, but no one wanted to listen. It did not matter enough to investigate and act. So, I mean, this is nuts.
Yeah.
And then, so 2002, May 22nd, a 209-page report was released by Guidepost Solutions, so an update, an independent firm contracted by the SBC's executive committee detailing that SBC leaders had stonewalled and disparaged clergy sex abuse survivors for nearly two decades. It also listed the named cases that involved the admission, confession, guilty plea, conviction, judgment, sentencing, and registered sex offenders. It did not include cases that did not relate to sexual abuse or cases that ended in acquittal. The report listed more than 700 entries within the parameters. Some of the information in the report has been redacted to protect minors and other indicated in the report that are deemed innocent. The report also stated that known abusers were allowed to keep their freaking positions without informing their current church or congregation.
Wow.
To take deliberate action to address these failures and chart a new course is something we needed to do, but we didn't. And then it went on to say, executive committee leaders pledged from here on out, to eliminate sex abuse within the SBC. How about we just terminate it, eliminate all of it now?
Right.
You know, the fact that some of them were allowed to keep their positions within that denomination or move to another church. This is a whole freaking denomination. Yeah, one of the biggest denominations in the world. And this isn't like way back in the day. This is happening recently. Some of this stuff happened 20 years ago, and some of those reports are just coming out now. So for so many years, people got to keep their positions while they were bringing in church trauma to certain individuals.
Yeah.
And when you think about it, some of these ones in small towns, that person can't say anything because everyone in that church would look at them. Everyone at church would be like, oh, like, what are they saying? Because it's a closed, small community, and they could be kicked out. And if you're in a big church, no one would listen because it's a big church, big-time pastor. It is what it is. This is going on in famous churches like Westboro Baptist Church. This is going on even in big churches like Grace Community Church. It's going on even in our local churches. Call me, you know, crapping on churches. I'm just keeping it real. Yeah. We need to stand up to the abusers. And if that means standing up to certain churches and their elder boards, we need to do it. And that means even like a church like Southwest, this other church in the area that actually did right. It's just those people, the people that they were hurt by Southwest went to this other church. And then you got all these things like the SBC and all these different churches like that. And that doesn't look good. And when people, when you try to tell people, just, oh, I don't, church is so bad. People are all about media nowadays, and they're going to see all these things, and it's just going to reaffirm their belief to not go to church. Now, they might not be the ones faced with trauma. The people in these situations are over 700 people that they have recorded from the SBC alone face trauma. But even if you say, oh, it's only 700, and look how many churches are in America, I said if just one person faces trauma because of church, then the church has failed.
Yeah.
Quote me on it.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, I can't blame these people for not wanting to keep going to church. You know what I mean? If that was me, I would not want to go to any church.
And how are you going to tell them, hey, come
never,
to church?
Yeah, I would never trust the church again. Even if that wasn't me, if I was aware of that or knew somebody, I'd be like, I don't know. That seems iffy.
The church didn't hurt you. The church is just a building. But aren't you guys the church? Yeah, we're the church. Well, you hurt me.
I mean, we're part of the same group of believers as all these churches that we've named so far. You know, we're in that same body. But but this brings us to the point of the episode where we say, well, what would Jesus do?
it took us 38 minutes of you giving information, me crapping on churches,
to finally say, what would Jesus do? But I do want to talk about, like, okay, so now we're aware that this stuff happens, right? Now the question is, what can we do about it? Because that's what matters, is where do we go from here, right? This stuff has happened, and unfortunately, it will still happen in the future, but what do we do about it? How do we help fight this problem? And there's a couple things I want to point out, but one, a Bible story came to my mind. It's about time I think we read some scripture.
After all my language, yes.
But Matthew chapter 17, the last couple verses of the chapter, Jesus with his disciples, and they're getting ready to go to the temple. And verse 24, they go to Capernaum, and there's a temple tax of two drachma. It's an official term, drachma.
No, never mind. I'll take that.
and so
I'll probably forget. But
and so there's a tax, and the I guess Peter is near the temple, and they ask him, "Does your teacher not pay the two drachma tax?" And Peter says, "Yes." And so, and the taxes in the Old Testament, this is a perfectly legal and accepted tax that's applied on people coming to the temple. So Peter goes to Jesus, and Jesus says, "What do you think, Simon? From who do the kings of the earth collect customs or poll tax? From their sons or from strangers?" And when Peter said, "From strangers," Jesus says to them, "Then the sons are exempt." So basically what Jesus says is, the temple belongs to God, and I am the Son of God, therefore I am exempt from the tax. And by virtue of being a follower of God, you are also exempt. And so Jesus is like, we don't have to pay the tax, long story short. Mm-hmm. But this is what he says in verse 27. "However, so that we do not offend them, go to the sea and throw in a hook, and take the first fish that comes up, and when you open its mouth, you will find a coin. Take that and give it to me, to pay for you and me.
I wish that would have worked last year, because I had to pay free tax last year. I'm already poor.
Yeah, too bad we can't just find fish with coins in their mouth. But, of course, okay. Peter goes and fishes out a fish, and there's a coin, and they pay the tax. But I love what he says. Jesus says, like, look, we don't have to pay this tax, right? We're completely exempt from the tax. There's no reason we should pay it. But so that we don't offend them, we're going to pay it. That to me is like such a great thing for him to say, because he understood that it's more important for me to be in that temple than it is for me to die on this hill, right? Even though he was right, Jesus was entirely right that he didn't have to pay that tax, even though it was in Exodus or Deuteronomy. He knew he didn't have to pay the tax, but that wasn't what he was concerned about. He knew there was a bigger goal. Mm-hmm. And I say that because I think today, you know, obviously the abuse and misconduct is one thing, but a lot of the trauma is just treating people poorly. You know, if a gay couple were to come into our church today, I honestly don't know how well they would be treated. I don't know if they would be as accepted as we'd want them to be, because I think some people would think in that manner of, it's more important that I challenge that person on who they are than the bigger goal, which is
getting them in the temple.
Getting them in the church, getting them saved, right? If somebody were to come in who was homosexual, alcoholic, was addicted to pornography, was whatever, right? Insert whatever sin, I'm not going to be concerned about that sin. I'm going to be concerned about, how do I keep them here in the church? Yeah. How do I help them along this journey? In a
safe place.
Yeah, how do I make sure they stay in the place where they can be better, not, hey, you're an alcoholic, go get clean and then come back to the church. Deal with that. And I think that's a part of trauma, right? Somebody comes to the church and they're treated poorly because of who they are, what they've done, things like that. And I think we need to take that approach that Jesus has. Like, look, I don't want to offend that person. Now, not in the sense of, obviously, if somebody's living in sin, there comes a point where we have to address that.
Yeah.
But there's a time and place for that. Sometimes mm-hmm. we have to say, look, it's more important that I go with what needs to be done, even if it's wrong, even if it's not right. Jesus knew he didn't have to pay the tax, mm-hmm. but he did it anyways because there was a bigger goal. Yeah. And I think a lot of trauma is because we miss that bigger goal to focus on what is at the forefront,
mm-hmm.
what the obvious issues are, what that person's dealing with, and trying to correct their sin before they actually become saved,
mm-hmm.
right? The only time to judge somebody on sin is if they're already a Christian, right? Like, I'm more willing to call you out on something than I would be somebody who just walked into the building for the first mm-hmm. time. I'm not going to fight them or try to change them as much as I would you or somebody else who should know better, right? Mm-hmm. Those are two entirely different situations. And I think we need to take that approach of, let's not try to cause offense. Let's not try to, you know, preach this message of hate or you need to change yourself, when we should be looking at the bigger picture, you know? And speaking to that point, I've noticed more and more as I read the Gospels, the people Jesus tends to actually get angry at tend to be hypocrites, people who are, you know, the Pharisees.
And the ones who cover stuff up.
Right. You know, the tax collectors, those are the people he tends to get angry at.
You just hate anything about taxes in the Bible, don't you?
That's true. I don't like taxes.
That's right.
The people at the temple who are doing the money changing and whatnot. But never, and maybe I'm wrong, but never have I seen Jesus treat somebody who was a sinner with anger. He never treated somebody who was coming to him with anger. He never showed any sign of anger to anybody unless they were in a position of hypocrisy, right? The Pharisees. You know, he gets angry at the Pharisees a lot. You know, he calls them vipers. He challenges them. He gets angry at them.
Vipers.
Right? But he's angry at them because they should know better.
Yeah.
Right? He goes to the temple and he gets mad at the money changers because they should know better.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Even the rich man who comes and says, I want to follow you. And he says, all right, we'll go sell your stuff. And he says, well, I can't do that, and leaves away, right? Jesus rebukes him, not because he was wealthy, but because he didn't follow with what he said he was going to do.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't actually willing to follow. And my point to say is, if we're to treat somebody harshly or with judgment, it should be the ones who should know better.
Mm-hmm.
Not the ones who are trying to get help, trying to get better, mm-hmm. coming to church for the first time. And when we mix that up, you get trauma. You get people mm-hmm. who don't feel welcome, people who mm-hmm. feel rejected and hurt, and they're not going to want to come back to church if they felt like they were never accepted to begin with.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, we're allowing people in church every week to do whatever the heck they want to do because right. because it's something different.
Yeah.
But then certain sins they come in with, and then they people are like, oh, you know, stay away, get right. out. And that's where a lot of the trauma, like you were saying, can come in. And people say, oh, Jesus wouldn't really rebuke people. I mean, the Bible talks about as Christians, when someone who claims to be a Christian is caught in sin, we're supposed to go to them.
Yeah.
Right? And then if they don't want to listen to us, we take a brother or sister with us, then we talk to them. And then, I don't know if it's a third time or a fourth time, but then they say either three people or they say the whole church.
Right.
At some point, they get to the whole church. And if they still will not listen, then you're supposed to cast them out. Because right. now they're going to be hurting the church more than they are will be a benefit to it. Because they choose not to see the error yeah. of their ways. And when you allow pastors like John MacArthur
right.
to brush these things aside, it's like he's had this woman. He's had maybe the few people that agree with her to go to him, and he would not listen. But the trauma and abuse really kicks in when you get to the part where, okay, he's supposed to be cast out, but instead,
right.
she's cast out.
Yeah.
I come to you, and you don't trust me. You know, you're like, no, I'm doing fine. Someone else agrees with me, comes to you. And then the church comes with me and agrees. Normally, then, the biblical thing is, okay, hey, we love you, but you can't be here anymore until you get right, or until you see the error of your way. Not necessarily yeah. perfect, but see the error of your way. But some of these big scandals and trauma scandals, it's like, oh, you want to do that to me? Well, I'm the big guy here. So you may be the victim, but this victimizer is not leaving. So, boom.
Yeah.
And he can say, oh, I wasn't the victimizer in that. Well, actually, you kind of are now because you're the one who got her shamed. Like in this example, you're the one who got her, you know, told her to leave the church.
Right.
You're the one that made it seem like the husband was the good guy here and we should continue praying for him. Oh, but pray for her as well, but also treat her like an unbeliever. Gee, if she never comes back to Christ, I'm going to be so sad that she's turned away, but I will point my finger at John MacArthur right. the day I get into heaven.
Yeah.
Assuming I get there after him, because, well, I don't know if he makes
it. If he's 80-something, then I don't know.
I mean, I just sometimes I think, when I read these things, I just thought, how does someone get to heaven when yeah. they have not apologized or made right with someone?
Yeah.
When the Bible talks about even hating your brother or sister, you say murder is wrong, but you hate your brother or sister, you know, like it's just as wrong, right? Right? So like, and I just botched that a little bit, but you know what I mean. And that's like, I just think of guys like him or people at Westboro Baptist Church, that SBC, the people in the scandal that got to stay preaching, and then they die, and then there's that judgment, and it's like, if I was God, why would I allow you into heaven when you didn't make right with some of these congregants, and you purposely knew what you were doing? People are going to say I'm wrong, or they're going to talk to me later and be like, I don't know about that, but I genuinely question, like John MacArthur, I genuinely question his faith, I genuinely question some of the former presidents of the SBC, I genuinely question their faith if they're hiding some of these things. And it's not just some conspiracy theory. You can look it up. All the information's there. Conservative and liberal websites. Everything's all there. Both sides, everything. And you will see that he was in the wrong. You will see the SBC, a major denomination, not just in California or the U.S., but the whole world. You will see a lot of those people were wrong. They were dead wrong. And I question these people in high power, what's going to happen to them.
Yeah.
You know, you got Mars Hill Church and Mark Distroll or whatever, and the scandals he was a part of, and the sexual abuse that he covered up within his church. And they lied about it, and eventually he had to confess when things came out, and he left the church. The church went to shambles. And like a year later, he started a church in another state. People followed him there. And people are going to hate me for this, but there's going to be a certain place in hell for people like that.
Right.
And I hope they repent, and not just repent. I hope they go find the people, if it's safe to do so, and contact them, tell them I was wrong. You don't have to like me ever again, but I have done wrong. And be sincere, open, write a letter, do something, and make that change with your lifestyle. Because John MacArthur, I called you out. SBC, I've called you out. Mark Distral, I've called you out. You know, the elders of Southwest Church, if you're even listening, even though you're 50, you're only 15 minutes away from our church, I'm calling you out. The church has done a piss poor job when it comes to things like scandals. And very few churches handle it well. And sadly, the ones that handle it well still will lose people. And the ones that don't handle it well, people stay because they cover it up. And then when it gets found out, it's, oh, that was years ago, and then the abuser is just left abused.
Right.
So, that's my final thought.
Oh, we're getting the final thoughts. I still have something else I wanted to add. I guess that would be my final thoughts.
When you said that, I thought of Marvel. We're like, oh, when he's like, I'm Doctor Strange. Oh, we're using made-up names now. I'm Spider-Man.
His name's actually Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
No, but what I wanted to add is, like, well, what do we do about it, right? Like,
oh, yeah.
As listening to this episode, how are we supposed to handle this? And I think the simple term is love your neighbor, right? I mean, if I had to sum up the one command, I guess two commands to follow as Christians, is one is obey God and two is love your neighbor, right? That's time and time again is what we see.
Every neighbor, yes.
And then I guess my point is if somebody walks into our church, our first job is to love them.
Mm-hmm.
Not to save them, not to correct them, not to chastise them, is to love them.
Unless they're Lakers fans, yeah.
Definitely.
No, just kidding.
And I know some people say, oh, but you have to have tough love, and it's like, there's a time and place for that. The first and foremost step is to make them feel accepted and welcomed into the building. You don't have to affirm what they're doing, you don't have to accept what they're doing, you just have to make them feel welcomed. Mm-hmm. And there's a fine line between those two things. And then the other thing we need to do is, if somebody who has experienced trauma from church, whether personally or by secondhand or by reading these stories, it's not to try to argue with them or try to say, oh, well, those people are wrong because of this, and that reason. Again, it's to love them. It's to make them understand that these things happen, right? They're not crazy. They're not making it up. They're not wrong in some way. And again, make them feel welcomed in our church. Right, we can't change Southwest, we can't change Westboro, we can't change any other church. All we can do is focus on our church first.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and if we're not making this a place for people to feel welcome, then we're not doing a good job.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the end story of it is, you know, imagine how you would feel if you're walking into a church for the first time, knowing that they're, you know, from what you've seen, there's a good chance they're not going to accept who you are, right? Because you've seen churches turn away gay people, you've seen churches turn away other types of people, and you're walking into a building that you already feel is going to be hostile. You know, how do you think you would feel if all of a sudden everybody was very welcoming, very accepting, very not asking any questions about what you've done, but just want to know who you are and then, you know, what brings you and stuff like that, right? I mean, that could drastically change how somebody feels and make them on the path to salvation, right? And some of that is being good Christians in our day-to-day life, right? To break those stereotypes, break those molds that somebody says, oh, wow, you're a lot better for a Christian than what I expected. You know what I mean? Because people are having this perception that Christians are abusive, that they're judgmental, that they're hostile, that they cover up the wrong actions of their own kind, right? That they're, you know, all these things we've talked about, that's how a lot of people look at our church. You know, and you might say, well, Valley Christian Assembly is not like that. My church is not like that. It doesn't matter. That's how people see it,
mm-hmm.
You know? And if we're not actively trying to be better, then that's how people will continue to see it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not enough to just be a good church. You have to be actively better and going out of our way to be better. Because if we're just saying, oh, well, we're a good church and we just kind of get complacent, then someone will come. Somebody with trauma is going to come. And we're probably not going to be in the right place because we just kind of went by comfortably with our congregation of people. We get the same people every week. We get comfortable with those people, and we're not actively trying to be more in the Word, more in prayer, more discerning, more loving, and we're not going to be equipped for when that happens. So I think it's – I guess my final thought is we need to be constantly in prayer and – in the spirit, right? Have that discernment so that when somebody comes to us with trauma, with sin, with some style of lifestyle that we may don't agree with, that the spirit can take over and show us how to love that person in a way that they need to be, mm-hmm. right? Not relying on our own abilities or treating it how we would want to in the sense of challenging them or trying to change them, but just say, hey, how should I treat that person, God? Mm-hmm. Like, you take over, you give me the words, you help me love that person, mm-hmm. and just get them in the doors.
Yeah.
And let God handle the rest.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my final thought, is just understand that the goal is to get them in the doors, let God handle the rest. That's my final thought.
Yeah, no, that's great. I agree.
Good.
I think one's going to dispute what we said. They're just going to dispute how I personally said it.
They're
going to
say how you said it, not what you said.
Yeah. I will admit that, but you get fired up over things that just don't happen. Yeah. It is what it is. And honestly, those same people tell me same thing. I love you all, but I'm
He's never going to change, guys.
I fired up. These things. And this is a serious issue.
Yeah, Church
wants to cover it up.
Yeah.
And, you know, it is.
This is real stuff.
I mean, we're not talking about, is Barney and Teletubbies harmful to our children's spiritual?
That's next week.
Yeah. Is it harmful to their spirituality? Like, okay, who cares? This is serious, legitimate stuff.
No, people are not Christians anymore because of this stuff. And they might never be again.
Because of the trauma, not Barney.
No, that Barney's traumatic too.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, there are people who are not Christians and might never be again because of church trauma. So this is a very serious issue.
And my final thought would be that it is partially what happened to them. I also think the other side of the trauma is how the church, dealt with it.
Yeah, what they didn't do.
Because not all these situations was the head pastor. Not all these situations were the elder board.
Yeah.
So like this church, I didn't say their name. I didn't want to. But when this pastor, associate pastor, and this other associate female pastor left their spouses for each other, this church did a good job. They were all heartbroken. They gave them a chance at reconciliation. Hey,
right?
You said this has been going on for this long. We're willing to give you a path to reconciliation. You walk away for a little bit. We get you the help you guys need with your spouses. We'll bring you back on board after so much time. A path restoration, they said no. And then the church, they fired them or they quit, whatever. And then the church, in a professional way, they wouldn't have said like how I said it. They basically came forth and shared, a decent amount of the story, maybe not straightforward. And then they said, any questions you have, we are open book. You can come email us, right, and we can set up a meeting and talk with each one of you personally if you would like. They kept it kind of brief, but they said, we'll talk to anybody and everybody.
Right. They didn't try to hide it.
And they did it right. So there are churches that will do it right. And the people facing some of that trauma, they still go to that church. The lady who her husband left her, she still attends that church, even though that's where the trauma happened.
Right.
Because the church community rallied behind her.
Yeah.
They rallied behind the victim, not the victimizer. They didn't try to cover it up for fear of, we might lose people because of this.
Right.
No, that's not what they did. They rallied behind the victimizer, not the victim. I mean, they rallied behind the victim.
There you go.
They rallied behind the victim, not the victimizer. And that was such a good line. I messed it up.
You messed it up.
But you think about that. That's how Jesus was.
Yeah.
He rallied behind and tried to reach and teach and serve the victims.
Yeah.
And taught them how to have a spiritual way of life that would overcome what the victimizers did.
Yeah.
And that was belief in him, community with good people, and a love for Jesus. And you will still feel hurt. Yeah. Jesus felt hurt. He was on the cross. He hurt. But he overcame the victims. And he was no longer victimized.
Yes.
No. He overcame the victimizers.
I was going to say, I think you got that wrong.
He overcame the victimizers.
Right.
And was no longer a victim because he went above and beyond with what he was supposed, with the way he said to live, he lived.
Right.
And he overcame that. And there are people who have abused you, who have abused the church you've been in, and you have mistrust. And I'm not saying if you just fully give to Christ again, it's going to, bam, you're good. It won't. And you might need to go to counseling.
Right.
And I've heard of churches that say, no, you can't go to counseling. No, screw that. If you need counseling, go.
Yeah.
Preferably go find a third-party Christian counselor. There's pretty huge Christian counseling associations that I went to. I had a therapist for a year. I did that, Get the help you need. because there are churches out there that they're just as in the wrong as the situation is for how they go about it.
Yeah.
And there are people who are willing to reconcile and try to get right with their faith, even after the drama they face, if the church goes about it a gentle, great, straightforward way. But when they don't, it makes them want to leave the church twice as fast as when that situation happens there.
Yeah.
So just remember that. And remember, there's a difference between victim and victimizer. Because clearly...
Mark has forgotten.
Clearly. This is Brokenness to Faith podcast. We went over an hour. Thank you guys for listening. And I'm saying this now. It wasn't super funny, but there's a little bit of tidbits in the beginning. And if you hear this, I'm saying that. So if you did hear it, you know. If you didn't, it's because Noah cut it out and he shouldn't have. Deuces.
Peace.